You've done it. You found the Debt Street podcast, where our guests from across the financial landscape discuss their exciting careers, their hard-won insights, and how they are helping clients turn debt into assets. And now, here's Carol from Derivative Logic to bring you today's episode with our special guest, Ben Truitt from Lending Standard.
Someone who has built a highly successful business that is all about helping lenders with simplifying loan origination and underwriting. I'm extremely excited to introduce you to Ben Truitt from Lending Standard. Ben, welcome to Debt Street.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
We're excited to hear about this Lending Standard as a SaaS platform. But before we dive in, I'd like to know a little bit about your past and how you ended up in Lending Standard.
So I came primarily out of the real estate lending business. Over the years, I had worked with a number of large commercial real estate lenders in various roles, origination through underwriting. Academically, my background has always been engineering and computer science. And for me, it was very natural to look for ways to, streamline processes, to build out automation tools. And so that was something I had always been doing internally at these lenders I had worked for, built out workflow management systems, underwriting systems, scaled those across organizations, and came to Lending Standard after I had stepped away from that for actually a little bit of time. And I was interested in building a solution like that I had been building internally, but bring it to market and sell it. And then I had been introduced to the CEO of Lending Standard, Andy Kallenbach, through a mutual connection with a lender, a chief underwriter that is one of the Lending Standard clients, actually. And he had introduced me to Andy, and Andy and I just hit it off, had very similar vision for the kind of product that we would like to bring to market, very complementary skill sets. He had a lot of skills in the areas where I felt like I was lacking, I think vice versa. And so we made a really great team to jump on board together. And so that was how I came to Lending Standard.
How long ago was that?
It was a bit over 6 years ago, about 6.5 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's So help me understand, what does Lending Standard do? I know it's a SaaS platform, but what are you guys offering?
What we offer is a platform, primarily an online-based platform that lenders can use to engage with their borrowers, as well as other external parties, third parties, et cetera. Gather all the information and due diligence that's needed for a loan, regardless of the stage. So that could be pre-engagement, it could be lead generation, initial sizings of loans, up into and through underwriting. So we streamline the workflow in addition to gathering due diligence, creating all the documentation that would actually go into a loan package. Or maybe it depends on what kind of lender it is, but sometimes you may be preparing a credit memo, something for an internal review, possibly an external review. So we facilitate the assembly of all of that information and documentation, as well as creating documents, giving external parties the ability to DocuSign things to really just add as much efficiency as possible in the process of getting to a final package. Includes, managing third parties, really that whole system that you can imagine that is in place for structuring a mortgage and putting a mortgage together is what we do.
I'm curious to know, from the third party communication perspective, are those communication kind of sent out via the platform and to notify them? Do they have to log into the platform? And I'm guessing like the third parties include kind of different counsels. Legal counsels and maybe cash management people?
Yeah, it can include legal. It can include legal representation for the borrower that's involved in the transaction. Most often, it actually includes more of a consulting roles, third-party appraisers, engineers that are doing inspections, those kinds of things. And for each of the loans, there is a checklist of items that need to be put together related to a particular third party. So our system would give the internal user at the lender the ability to manage that required checklist and then share it with that external party through a portal, an external portal where that third party could interact with the checklist. So if it's an appraiser, a checklist item might be a appraisal certificate that they received to become an appraiser. They could upload that. It might include the actual appraisal document itself. And so they could upload a draft of the appraisal. And then as it gets through to kind of a final version, different versions, they would also be able to upload potentially a data file that could be something like a CSV or a JSON file that could represent the data that's within the report so that we can extract that data and use it in other areas of the system to auto-populate other documents that might be required for the ultimate submission package. Those are some ways that we interact with them. All of that, we have what we call triggers in the system, which is really a form of automation. And so when one event happens within the system, it'll trigger other events. And so as an example, a loan will come in and there's usually a loan officer or an originator that brings a loan and gathers some very initial due diligence, borrow information. They'll then transfer that loan over into the underwriting department. Once that happens, the stage of the loan would change in our system. You would represent it now as a loan that's in the underwriting stage. And once that happens, the triggers will recognize that, okay, now you're in the underwriting stage. This loan is a such and such type. Maybe it's a multifamily loan. We will now trigger some activities in the system and also checklists in the system that are specific to that loan type. So those checklists would automatically populate with all the items that would be required of that third party. The activities would automatically fire off things like notifications to that third party that say, hey, you've been added to this transaction as an appraiser. Please log into your portal and view your checklist and, you know, all that kind of stuff. That's all very customizable, you know, client to client, but that's a kind of gives you an idea of the way the system functions.
That's really, really cool, actually. So are the customization, like, can you customize the trigger?
Absolutely. Or
you could,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. They're all customizable. Each lender that we work with has different loan products. You know, they might be doing things that are fairly standard, like HUD financing. It's fairly similar across the board. I might be doing other agency financing, Fannie Freddie on the multifamily side. They might have bank products that could be bridge or mezzanine, preferred equity. And then a lot of those are very dynamic as far as the requirements that potentially come into play. And so those triggers, yeah, having custom triggers is very important, as well as being able to have not just things like stage, but potentially characteristics of the loan or the principals or the mortgagors involved in the loan may also need a trigger event. So you could think about maybe an input form that we have in our system that you would input information about a transaction. And maybe one of the questions is this entity a foreign entity? And if they click yes, that might now trigger additional requirements around the documentation that would be required to verify information about that entity. So it'd be very customizable and also dynamic as you progress through a loan.
So who are the main customers right now on the platform? Lenders.
primarily very large commercial lenders. We really serve, I would say, kind of the spectrum of commercial lenders as far as loan volume is considered. And our product scales to some extent based on our lender's business model. So if it's a relatively small lender, they might not utilize our entire system. And then our pricing would be in line with that. What we find is that the largest lenders that have the largest number of loans that they're trying to manage have the tendency to benefit more from systems like this that can help manage their pipeline of loans across their organization. And so many of our clients are the largest lenders that you can think of in the space. Very large banks, large commercial lenders. Yeah.
Gotcha. So what were the big wins early on that makes you realize like this is going to work?
Well, very early on, we built the system. So on the multifamily side, HUD has a product that they make available for multifamily and senior housing. It's a very structured product and the underwriting is known to be very thorough. The documentation requirements are very extensive, a huge number of documents that go into these packages. And there's a lot of, I would say, duplication of information throughout the portfolio or throughout the loan package. And so it's very important that there's consistency across all those documents. And there was a real opportunity there for us to go in and modernize the technology that was being used in that business. And so that was where we actually first focused. We felt like if we could win there, we could really win anywhere in the commercial space because the it was so rigid what we had to be able to comply with. And so that was, I would say, the being successful there showed us that we have a product that we could bring out to the rest of the business or the rest of the market. And also it forced us to build out some portions of our platform that we found that nobody else has, that really has given us a competitive advantage as we move into other areas. And a lot of that is around that due diligence, document creation, and also the external, the need for a very well refined external portal for that borrower experience. Because there's a lot of information that, you know, these documents that you have to have a borrower fill out on the HUD side, they're not intuitive. They're very, very difficult for a borrower to kind of find their way through. And so being able to provide very good insights around that and a very good means of communication with the borrower was really important. And so we built out those tools very early on, and that's really given us a huge you know, advantage. And also that answer your initial question, that really showed me at least that we were really heading in the right direction.
That is a great story. So when you actually pitched the idea to the HUD lenders, did you sort of receive resistance? Because sometimes I hear that the agency or the big lenders aren't necessarily tech forward, and they like to do things the old way because that's what they're comfortable in. Did you run into that problem?
Oh, absolutely. And it just like any new technology, you've got the early adopters that are really ready to just jump right in. And then you've got a lot of folks that may be very efficient in the work that they're doing. And for them, they don't necessarily see the benefit of trying to go through a learning curve with a new system. And so for us, a lot of it is around change management going to those organizations. And as users get comfortable with a new system, they all seem to get eventually they're all really excited about it and they really see the benefit there. But there's a lot of resistance there. Our biggest competitor is the existing Excel and Word document that our users had been using prior to trying to adopt more advanced technology. Yeah.
Yeah, that seems to be sort of reasonable in terms of like the roadblocks for people to change the way how they do it. Pretty typical story. So for your platform, is there a need for an API ability to talk to others outside the system at all, or is it more a self-contained one place and kind
Yeah,
of system?
absolutely. Absolutely. We do have integrations that we do with other systems right now. We really, our focus has been building out what we see as our core business. And so we haven't been trying to make a push into other parts of our clients' businesses, things like servicing or asset management or accounting functions. That being said, what we are finding is that the system that we built out, when you see it from a larger organizational perspective, it really works well as a centralized hub for managing everything about your loan and about not just your loan, but your entire pipeline of new loans or even existing loans. Because there's, you know, we have kind of the key pieces. You've got that borrower portal that you need there. You've got a centralized repository for all the data. And so it makes a lot of sense to have it fed out to other systems through API integrations. And so we do that, you know, CRM systems, servicing systems, asset management systems. And so we're seeing more and more of a need to be able to not just play well with those other systems, but make the implementation process as quick and easy as possible so that we can help our clients if they maybe want to make a change with one of those third parties that they're using, or maybe they have even multiple third parties that are serving similar purposes within the same organization for potentially different product types. So it's, yeah, API is definitely a big piece for us.
That really makes sense. And like on the flip side, what event that happened kind of during this past 6 years that you weren't kind of sure if business was going to survive? And how do you figure out a way to pull through, you know, with the economy kind of going into recession? Are you guys positioning yourself in a more defensive mode or have worries that you might do something differently?
You know, it's funny that so I was just at a MBA tech conference. I think it was last week, and There were a lot of lenders there from the single family, residential single family space. And they're a very kind of negative, I think, outlook for where that market is right now. And I understand that. And the same is in the commercial space as well on the lending side. However, we actually feel very detached from that. And it's because what we're finding is that a lot of these organizations, they're taking this opportunity when the loan volume is low to invest in infrastructure. And so we are actually in a position, a stronger position now than I've ever seen us in. We have bigger clients coming on board now and more clients coming on board in the next 6 months than I have ever seen since I've been with Lending Standard. So for me, we being that one of those infrastructure providers, we're somewhat countercyclical. When the market's down, it's a good time to focus on investing and adopting new technology. And so for us, that is when it works well. Counter to that, I think some of our slowest times were actually when the market was the busiest, because our clients they're completely consumed with what they're doing, trying to get each loan closed. And they don't have a minute to look at anything else. And so those are actually some of our slowest times.
Gotcha. Yeah, that really makes sense. And that's what I've been hearing from the market. When things are slow, that's when people invest in technology, because they know next time around, they will be more efficient. They might be able to cut some headcounts. Every dollar savings time counts. So that totally makes sense. So you mentioned your biggest competitor are basically the Excel spreadsheets that people are very, very attached to. Are there actual other competitors out there that's kind of doing similar things and that you guys are doing, or are you guys kind of like really disrupting the market as being the first to market with the workflow that you guys have and the borrower portals that allow you to be really, you know, the only player in the market?
Yeah, you know, there are competitors that compete, I would say, in areas of our platform. There's some competitors out there that are, I would say, fairly good at managing or creating dashboarding or instrumentation over the pipeline, the loan pipeline that's in process. And so we have competitors on that side of the business. There are also some competitors on the side of the Excel modeling, because we do provide Excel models and we have integrations with Excel to be able to leverage that as a tool. So there are some competitors out there that have some good technology around the Excel piece. You know, that being said, I think being able to tie it all together like we do, I don't think that there is a competitor that can really do that, as well as some of the technology that we've developed even in Microsoft, in Word, and Excel, some of the plugin technology. I have yet to see anything anywhere close to what we have there, as far as the integrations that we have with how seamlessly Excel works with our online system and Word. I mean, some of the things that we've done with our Word plugin, I'm amazed. You know, I run product there, and I'll have these visions for what I'd like to see done, and then next thing I know, we have it, and it's pretty amazing to me.
Wow. Yeah, you know, it feels like actually integrating with Excel, with Word, it's actually harder than Excel. You know, when I've seen like other software platform, they have Word integration and whatever template that they use, once you've imported it, the formatting get all wonky off, and it's kind of hard to be, you have to do a lot of work to just make it look the way how you want it to look. It's not really, it's not as easy.
Most of our lenders, you know, they're producing these very thorough credit memos or narratives, and they want to be able to utilize the data that they have put together in their Excel document. You know, the outputs from their financial analysis, they want to be able to include that in their narrative, and being able to easily insert those data elements into a narrative and also keep them updated so that if you go change something in your model, it'll update in your narrative. As well as, you know, things like the text itself. The lenders we work with, we often see them starting a narrative by using another narrative from another transaction. And then they just highlight the whole thing yellow, and they go in and they start highlighting it as they make updates. And which is, you know, for a whole lot of reasons, that's not an ideal process. And so being able to reuse text that you really like from one document to another is something we've done through the plugin, where you can archive blocks of text and import it into other documents. So some really neat stuff. You can insert images that you've uploaded into our online system and wherever you'd like. And even tables that we've constructed, some pretty neat stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like when you say images, I think you ought to have a way to let people import memes into the document
You
just
know,
to make it more fun.
yeah, if for nothing else, make sure whoever's reviewing it catches those things, right?
Exactly. Is somebody actually looking at this? Oh, I caught a meme. Yeah. So going forward, what big goals do you have for the business?
Right now, we have a large roadmap that we have laid out for the future. However, coming into this year, we have really refocused our resources on making sure that the product that we're currently providing to our existing clients and also these clients that we have coming on board right now thoroughly meets their needs without trying to reach too far ahead of the market right now and build out other roadmap items. And we call this our goal plating process, and we're going through the entire system and really doing a lot to goal plate all the functionality. The system that we have right now that exists was our next gen system. So we did a complete rebuild of our platform over the last couple of years. And so it's a very new technology, a much better user experience, gives us the opportunity to build out all sorts of other functionality. And so we're really focused on just making that as good as we can. And from there, we'll start looking at other roadmap opportunities, as we build on top of that foundation. Yeah.
That sounds great. I think a lot of kind of tech firm, they have gone too far too quickly with getting new line of businesses or whatever, and like forget about their core customer that are actually paying.
Right.
So yeah, that's actually a great strategy that you guys are doing. Any cool stories that you want to tell, with like the past 6 years and with this business? We our listeners love a good story. I'm not sure if you have like a fun, cool story that you want to tell.
I don't know, how fun it is, but it's for me, it's fun to look back and think about some of the early times. When I came on board, I was one of six people, and we have right now, I believe, four of us that are still with the company. And so, thinking back on some of the changes the organization has gone through, even culturally, when you have that a group of people that's that small, every new person you bring in evolves the culture within the organization. So that's been really interesting to watch that progress. But some of the things that I think I'll look back on as time continues, and even now that I remember fondly, are some of the early days the CEO and I would spend late hours. I would be out, because I'm in Denver myself and the company's in Kansas City. I'd be out in Kansas City and we'd be in the office. Everybody else had left. We'd have a whiteboard and we'd be sketching out all these ideas of what we had for this kind of next gen product or what we thought we could really make an impact in the market with. And to me, that was a lot of fun. I mean, coming up with those ideas, I mean, we spent really a couple of years, I would say, crystallizing what we thought we should do and then being able to actually put that into place, in development and actually in our system now, the past couple of years. To me, that's been a lot of fun. That's been exciting. As far as other stories, fun stories, nothing that really jumps out at me, or at least nothing that I should probably be sharing on a podcast.
Oh, that's a bummer. All right, well, you can tell me the story after the recording. So along the way, when you kind of go through your development process, how do you sort of balance between taking the risk of making a mistake and thinking that if there could be actually a big reward and actually made that mistake and be like, oh, well, okay, we've wasted like time and resources on this. This is not the right path to go. Like, how to mitigate that?
For us, we spend a lot of time talking through our development requirements around new concepts in our system. And we make an effort to make sure that we have the key folks involved in those conversations. And we usually will flush them out well enough that by the time it actually gets into development, we don't have a lot that we've had to backtrack on. That being said, I do think there are some times in the past where we've built out a system and thought it was really met the needs that we were trying to meet. And then when it's all said and done, you take a step back and look at it and think, what did we just do? This doesn't, no one's going to ever use this. It's not, it hardly even works, right? You do make those mistakes, but I think it's really important to have a culture within any organization that accepts those mistakes and encourages moving quickly and taking measurable risks. I think there's a book I was reading the other day that was talking about pilots, and I believe it was in World War II, and they said that the pilots that actually were the most aggressive and took the biggest risks were the ones that lived the longest. The ones that were the most careful were the ones that actually didn't. And it really, and it, when it starts to, when you start to think about it, you don't want to be acting on your heels. You know, you don't want to be in a company or a business that you're trying to grow and moving on your heels, because you're not going to be versatile enough. You're not going to be quick enough to really meet the constantly changing needs of the market. And so I think it's important for us to always be on the balls of our feet, if you want to continue that analogy.
I love it. I love it. So one last question, you know, if you could recommend a book that my listeners can listen to, what would that be? Or read or listen to?
I read a lot.
Would that
of
be
books.
That book?
Well, that one, I don't recall exactly. I think that book was called The Slight Edge is what
the
it was.
The Slight Edge.
Yeah. And I do like to read a lot, and I try to balance my reading between books that stimulate my thinking around goal setting, vision creating, those kinds of things, along with more technical types of books. So on that side, I would say that's a little bit more around that goal setting, kind of vision pursuing types of books. Another one I really enjoy, and this one had been recommended by Bill Gates, is how I actually came across this book, but it's called 1,000 Brains. And I do a lot around AI, machine learning technology as well. And so for me, it was really interesting to get a better understanding about the way that the human brain works. And so that, I would say that's another great book. That one with Jeff Hawkins, I have it actually sitting on my desk here. That's another great one.
I have that on my list now, so I'm going to be reading them pretty soon. Any other questions you want me to cover before we kind of end this? This is actually a super like interesting conversation personally for me. I learned a lot, and I feel like I'm going to reach out to you and have another conversation, not like on the podcast, but you know, another conversation to kind of pick your brain. Hopefully you don't charge me anything, but if you do, you know, you can always invoice me.
I think one thing that's really interesting is you made the point where a lot of these lenders are using this very outdated technology. They're not very comfortable with new technology, or in particularly changing technologies. I think one thing that's really interesting is thinking about, okay, how is this business going to change over the next decade? I think is a really interesting concept. I don't know if it's a single question, or it could be possibly a whole podcast talking about that, but I think that's something that's really interesting as well.
How's the industry going to change in the next 10 years?
If I were to think about some of the changes that we've seen in the past, more recently in the lending space, in the real estate space, and try to carry that out going forward, I definitely think technology is a big piece of it. We've seen also a lot of advancements in AI. The thing that's really interesting about to me about AI is that we've had AI around for a very long time. I mean, a calculator is AI, right? But the advancements now in AI are actually creating things that can make a significant difference in the way that we as humans do our work, and not just by making us faster, but giving us insights that we wouldn't be able to come up with on our own. And so I think that's one thing that's really interesting when you think about, you know, for instance, underwriting a transaction and being able to have a, you know, an AI technology that you could ask, what risks in this transaction am I missing? What should I be looking into? And have that AI guide you down that path. I think that's really interesting. I also think that real estate in general, due to the way that it's securitized and that you hold title to real estate, it's very dependent on a lot of the processes in, you know, government workflows, being able to record a physical title, all those kinds of things. And I think that we're going to address a lot of those inefficiencies over time, and we'll find easier ways of holding title to assets and then ultimately securitizing those titles. When you think about underwriting, which is what we do a lot, what we're really doing is giving investors assurance around what they are buying. So if you're going to buy a mortgage or you're going to buy a mortgage security, you want to know that it's been underwritten per some standard. And that's really what we're doing. Now, when you think about that, we are doing that in place of giving transparency, because giving transparency is so difficult. I think one area that we're going to see a lot of development is actually providing real-time transparency into assets for the investors that are purchasing securities or mortgages, so that as that asset goes through its life and maybe there's a loan against it, whoever it is that's buying the securities that have that as the underlying collateral can go see, okay, how's the asset performing today? What's the vacancy? What's the income? And see those kinds of characteristics and not need this big, long, drawn out underwriting process that we go through today. And I also think that around that, we'll be using a lot more AI or machine learning technology to assess those risks and determine the viability of the investments and the risks associated with investments. And that'll all be automated. I think it'll be something that's a much faster process, that being able to access equity in properties for the borrowers and invest in properties for the investors. So I don't know if that how well that answers your question. I think there's a lot to unpack there, but
It just sounds to me like there will be a lot of people looking for a new job or, a certain part of sort of this food chain. We wouldn't really need as many people, and really that's what technology help, right? We are become more efficient. We can do more work with kind of less human resources. And once you have a technology and AI, you can really scale more than you can ever imagine, because now like your platform can accommodate 100 loans, where if you have like two people, they can only do, I don't know, 10 loans or whatever. So it's actually fascinating to be in this space and like looking to disrupt the market and really change things. Like this is kind of what you guys are doing, disrupt the market. Like how do I kind of take away the inefficiency and make things more powerful? And with AI, I'm still learning, about AI myself, playing with, I didn't read enough books about the AI at this point, or, play around with it enough, but just that the whole ChatGPT, I'm already impressed with it. And I'm like, okay, now I can write articles, just type in ChatGPT and see if it sound good enough, if say the right thing that I wanted to say, and so it definitely, it's interesting to see how that's gonna not just disrupt the commercial real estate market, but in all facets of society.
And right now, I mean, the technology, it's difficult to say how it's going to progress and how if we can get that technology to come up with like an original thought, that I think that concept. But one thing, if you play with ChatGPT, I think machine learning is similar in general, where you have to ask the right questions to get what you want. And I think that's one thing where, at least for the next 5 years, I believe that there's still a big human need there. We need to be there to make sure that we're asking the right questions of the AI to get valuable insights from it.
And so that basically creates a whole sort of new sector of jobs to babysit AI. Who are the right people who actually have the expertise to ask the right questions to get these AI to do what you want it to do? That would be like a
Absolutely.
whole new career path.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So that would be very interesting. Well, Ben, thanks so much for joining us and being on the show. This has been a very engaging conversation. Your software platform, definitely, it's just so fascinating. We are looking forward to see how things will evolve and really wish you the best. And we work with different lenders and borrowers ourselves, so hopefully we'll be able to partner in some way to help each other with business goals. And so, thank you again for being on the show. And for those that are listening, make sure to subscribe to the podcast and leave us a comment wherever you're listening. That helps us to keep making the show better and better. And also, make sure to send Ben your questions about simplifying loan origination and underwriting. We'll see you next time on Debt Street. And Ben, by the way, how would our listener find you?
I would say, The best way is either connect with me on LinkedIn. You can find me there, Ben Truitt. I believe my LinkedIn is just Ben Truitt at the end there.
One and only Ben Truitt.
Well, in the URL, gotcha. And alternatively, feel free to shoot me an email over at ben@lendingstandard.com. It'd be great to hear from anybody. And Carol, I appreciate you having me on. I really enjoyed the conversation and look forward to connecting again.
Thank you for listening into this episode of the Debt Street Podcast, brought to you by Derivative Logic Incorporated. Derivative Logic helps you get straight to smart about interest rates and how best to manage your risks. Please like and share the link to this episode with your friends and coworkers. And subscribe to be notified of upcoming episodes. If you need to stay informed about interest rates, please go to www.derivativelogic.com and subscribe to the weekly Straight to Smart newsletter. Each edition looks at news and events of the past week, looks forward to important data soon being released, and briskly summarizes what it all means for you and your business. We look forward to welcoming you to the next episode of the Debt Street Podcast.